following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 210, recorded on Thursday, February 16th, 2017. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Coming up on this episode, a leaked photo shows one of Star Trek Discovery's new aliens, a painter gets a message from space, and what did Winston Churchill have to say about extraterrestrials? Plus the sighting and our picks and warnings. Before all that, though, our question this week...
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave! What's the question?
What direction would you like to see future alien invasion movies go? A new twist that we've not seen, or something that we haven't seen for a while?
I'd like a new twist that we've not seen. I feel like we keep recycling the same ideas.
What would the twist be, though?
M. Night Shyamalan writing an amazing script. That would be the twist.
I hear that the last one, what was it, the multiple personality syndrome movie?
Split, yes. Split.
I heard that was pretty good.
That's what
and
I heard.
It's actually a follow-up to Unbreakable.
Really? I did not know that.
Exactly.
What a twist.
It is the twist.
Oh, okay. So I was thinking that submersed aliens, what are they, USOs, unidentified
subversive aliens.
I mean, we kind of had that with Pacific Rim. I mean,
sort of.
Granted, they were from another dimension, but you know, they kind of came from the water.
Yeah, but I'd like to see something with the crafts, you know, because we've reported on crafts being seen, you know, coming from the water or going to the water or like underwater bases for UFOs.
Well, I mean, you've got, what was the movie with Robo Hitler and...
I don't even remember.
Like Nazis in the center of the earth or something. They had, I don't know. It was kind of underwater. It was under the ice, but okay. I mean, you know, it's frozen water.
Robo Hitler.
Yeah, I really don't know. Like, maybe what we think is aliens is like there's actually this giant mirror that we're looking into and seeing ourselves and are really freaked out by what we're seeing.
Anessa, you just blew my mind. That's a cool concept. That's a really cool. That's like a Twilight Zone concept right there.
Call me Hollywood.
We're the
okay. You're Hollywood.
We're the aliens. Oh, we could do a whole twist on the Planet of the Apes thing, where it's like. It's us, but from the future, invading our own planet.
From the future.
I feel like that's been done before, too, though.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the thing with my board, yeah, it has. Sorry about that.
Deja vu.
What would you like to see, Brad?
That is a very good question. I would like to see...
Aliens that
they
want our potatoes. That's a twist. They're here to take our potatoes.
You can't have my taters.
Nice. Very nice. So you don't have one that you can think of really right now?
I feel like we've seen extra-dimensional aliens that have come to destroy us. We've seen aliens from the future. We've seen aliens from the past. We've seen
aliens like possess people's bodies. I've seen aliens possess people's bodies.
Up close and personal, for reals.
Aw, yeah.
And I honestly can't think of anything new or exciting that could be done at this point.
Okay, how about... some aliens that want to do a podcast about humans, and they call it the Human Invasion Podcast.
Well, they're made of meat.
The only problem with that is we don't have interstellar travel yet, so it'd have to be us from the future, from the future.
They're aliens on the moon because we've been there
and done that.
And now they're like theorizing when we'll be back, how we're going to do it, how long we're going to be there, what we're going to do, it's going to their environment.
That would be a cute little like animated children's story. Like, because just as the last Apollo mission was leaving, they come running out and they're like, wait, we're here. And they've been sitting here up on the moon the whole time waiting.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sad now thinking about that.
I'm sorry.
In the news,
I have something very interesting that was sent my way by you, Dave, about Winston Churchill, of all people. And it turns out, well, Winston Churchill was always interested in science, and he actually had a science advisor that he employed when he was prime minister. But his love of science actually caused him to pen something that had been, type something that had been lost to time, but recently rediscovered. Here we go. A newly unearthed essay by Winston Churchill reveals he was open to the possibility of life on other planets. In 1939, the year World War II broke out, Churchill penned a popular science article in which he mused about the likelihood of extraterrestrial life. The 11-page typed draft, probably intended for a newspaper, was updated in the 1950s but never published. In the 1980s, the essay was passed to a U.S. museum where it sat until its rediscovery last year. That's kind of a tragedy. The document was uncovered in the National Churchill Museum in Fulton, Missouri, by the institution's new director, Timothy Riley. Mr. Riley then passed it to the Israeli astrophysicist and author Mario Livio. We're going to go with that pronunciation, who describes the contents in the latest issue of Nature Journal. Churchill's interest in science is well known. He was, as I said before, he was the first prime minister, British prime minister, to employ a science advisor, who was Frederick Lindemann, and met regularly with scientists such as Sir Bernard Lovell, a pioneer in radio astronomy. This documented engagement with the scientific community was partly related to the war effort, but he is credited with funding UK laboratories, telescopes, and technology development that spawned post-war discoveries in fields from molecular genetics to X-ray crystallography. Despite this background, Dr. Livio described the discovery of the essay as a great surprise. He was quoted as saying, "I would like you to take a look at some." Oh, okay. So he was being interviewed by BBC's Inside Science program, and he said to them, "I would like you to take a look at something." He gave me a copy of this essay by Churchill, and I saw the title, "Are We Alone in the Universe?" And I said, "What? Churchill wrote about something like this?" Dr. Livio says the wartime leader reasoned like a scientist about the likelihood of life on other planets. Let's see. Now, his writing kind of mirrors some of the modern arguments in astrobiology, which is the study for life on other planets. And he firmly believed that human life shouldn't be unique in the vastness of the universe. He defined life as the ability to breed and multiply, and noted the vital importance of liquid water, explaining all living things of the type we know require it. More than 50 years before the discovery of exoplanets, he considered the likelihood that other stars, could host planets, concluding that a large fraction of these distant worlds would be the right size to keep their surface water and possibly an atmosphere of some sort. And he also surmised that some would be at the proper distance from their parent sun to maintain a sustainable temperature, which means he had kind of reasoned, maybe on his own, but the Goldilocks zone whole concept, which is used very much in discovering exoplanets and trying to determine whether or not there could be life on that planet. Let's see. We're going to skip ahead. Churchill was a prolific writer. In the 1920s and 30s, he penned popular science essays on topics as diverse as evolution and fusion power. And Mr. Riley, the director of the Churchill Museum, believes the essay on alien life was written at the former prime minister's home in Chartwell in 1939, before World War II broke out, which we mentioned before. It may have been informed by conversations with the wartime leader's friend, Lindman, who was a physicist and might have been intended for publication in the News of the World newspaper. It was also written soon after the 1938 U.S. radio broadcast by Orson Welles, dramatizing the War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. The radio program sparked a panic, which is debatable, when it was mistaken by some listeners for a real news report about the invasion of Earth by Martians. Dr. Livio told BBC News that there were no firm plans to publish the article because of issues surrounding the copyright. However, he said the Churchill Museum was working to resolve these so that the historically important essay can eventually see the light of day. And the story came to us from BBC.com.
That's so interesting. He doesn't seem like, to me, he didn't seem like the kind of person that would be all sciencey. Because you think of Winston Churchill as this big guy wearing a certain kind of hat, you know, puffing on a stogie. You think of him as a wartime prime minister. You don't think of him in any other way, really, unless you have done your reading or know about his past history and what he was all about.
Yeah. I could see that. But in going through what I remember in history classes and in documentaries and things like that, he was a very well-reasoned individual. He didn't say things spur of the moment. He didn't do things off the cuff. He had his facts and ducks in a row, and then he spoke about them. So that really kind of sounds a lot like somebody who would have maybe a position not unlike a scientist or an analyst or even an accountant, somebody that deals with strict facts, has to keep them in order and think and talk about them to other people. So I don't know. I don't think it's an incredible stretch, but yeah, I could see where you would go, I hadn't really thought of that.
For a person who didn't know much about him, I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, no, I could agree with that. Yes. Yes.
I wonder how many other people came up with the idea of the Goldilocks zone. Like, I wonder if he was very unique in thinking that and other people knew about his idea for it, or he was just one of many people that figured it out.
Yeah, that's a very good question. It would be really interesting to be able to look at some of the writing of the time and be able to try to make that comparison.
Yeah, I think that would be the best way to figure that out. And we didn't really know much about interstellar things back then. You know, that was a time when we still thought there might be life on Mars.
Sure. Yep.
Interesting. Well, that's cool. That's like a big revelation. This is really cool. I'm glad that we found this story and we were able to talk about it this week.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Brad. Any Do you have anything, Anessa, to add to this story?
Not really. I'm just enjoying listening. What's being said.
Just like our listeners. You're a listener.
Yes, I'm a listener and a participant, and it is how I got on the show.
That's very true. You're not lying. All right.
That's ultimately how I got to Wisconsin.
And that's how I found true love.
Aww.
I know.
Happy belated Valentine's Day, everybody.
Hey.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
How was your week?
It feels like it's going on forever. I'm really tired. But it was good because we went out for Valentine's Day and painted each other mugs.
Oh, that was for Valentine's Day. I saw the pictures. I saw the photos on Facebook.
Yes. So I painted a shark mug for Brad. On the handle, I wrote, Jossum, because I'm punny.
It's true. And I found, they call it an emoji mug, and it's like the one eyes kind of closed, one eyes wide open, and the tongue's blah.
Yeah, I remember like that, yeah.
Somebody's being weird or freaking out. So I actually, instead of painting it yellow like an emoji, I painted it like a fluorescent green and tried to make it look like a funny Mr. Yuck. Remember the Mr. Yuck?
Yes. Yuck is mean. Yuck is green.
It was the, the stickers that they used to put to warn children that something might be poisonous and not something that you want to put in your face or deal with because it would make you sick. So
those of a certain generation know all about Mr. Yuck.
Yes. You kind of have to be of a certain age to truly appreciate the genius of Mr. Yuck.
Yeah. So Mr. Yuck is only partially poisoned because he's got like one eye open. He's partially caffeinated is the caffeine.
It's been a very snowy Valentine's Day week here in Ottawa. Like, we have all of the snow. You guys, sounds like you have none of the snow, and sounds like we have all of the snow. Do you want some of our snow?
No, thank you. We're just about rid of ours.
It's true.
Oh, come on. We could. Nope. We got
like
plenty.
It finally almost completely melts off the driveway, and then it snows, and then we start over again with the melting cycle.
No, we had a record snowfall on Sunday. Like our biggest snowfall of the year was Sunday. And then we got more on Tuesday and more on Wednesday and more today. And now it's done and it's supposed to warm up. It's going to be +6 Celsius on Sunday.
Nice.
So above freezing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Word.
Doubt it'll stay that way, but it'll be nice for a little bit.
It's always a nice relief when you have like above freezing temperatures. You're like, oh, this is a pretty day.
It's good to get a reprieve once in a while. You know?
It is.
Winter can take a break for a few days.
Wait a second now. You said record snow. How much?
Yeah, we got 50 centimeters this week.
Yeah, it's about just about 20 inches of snow.
Yep. So we got a lot this week.
That is a lot.
I think I'm done for winter. I think I'm done with winter for this year.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, we kind of got off lightly with winter this year.
It's been really weird.
It was very cold, but we didn't get a whole lot of snow.
It wasn't as cold as previous years, but we got more snow than last year. I forget when we had like the 8 inches of snow, like at that point we had, I think 12 inches total for the season. And up to that point, last year, we had only had like 3 inches, but we had colder temperatures.
See, Wisconsin can get some serious snowfalls. Like the last winter I lived there, it snowed like a emmer effer. Like it was crazy the amount of snow we had that last year.
Motherfracker.
Are you guys familiar with the Predator, the new version of the Predator that Shane Black is making?
I heard a little something about it. I have a feeling that the movie's going to take place during winter, or during Christmas, sorry.
Why do you say that?
Because Shane Black's movies usually take place around Christmas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's possible.
That's a theme.
Well, did you know that he was in the original Predator? Like, he was in it? He was an actor?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Before he was a director, he was an actor, and he was in the original Predator. So it's kind of neat that he's doing this reboot, and we may know who the people are that are going to be in those suits playing the actual Predators. IMDb just added stuntman Kyle Strotz. He did some work on The Cabin in the Woods to the cast of The Predator. He's listed as playing Predator.
Seems pretty straightforward.
Pretty self-explanatory. Strotz, who measures 6'9", is from Vancouver, where the film is set to be shot. The site also reports that fellow stuntman Brian A. Prince, Captain America Civil War, he did some stuff. I don't know what he did in that movie, but he did some stuff in that movie. Will also perform inside one of the new Predator suits, the 6'10". Prince recently mentioned on his social media accounts that he's in Vancouver filming a secret project.
Bum, bum, bum.
Filming for The Predator will begin, it's supposed to begin filming this month, and it'll be released on February 9th. There's also rumors circulating that there's a brand new Predator in The Predator, a bigger one that we've never seen before. They say it's supposed to be 10 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
10-foot tall Predator. So that's big. That's a huge one.
That's huge. That's bigly.
No.
That's when you run inside a hobbit hole.
No. Yep.
Too tall to
hobbit
enter.
Hole. See, that's right. Something that is sized very small that makes it seem like it's so much bigger.
All right, I got one more entertainment story for you guys. I wanted to ask you, are you looking forward to seeing The Predator?
I don't know. I'd like to see like a trailer before I decide, get a feel for it.
You got to be kind of encouraged, though, that Shane Black is on board this. He's the one doing this. What movies has he done? I forget.
Lethal Weapon, Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Oh, Lord. The ones I have stuck in my head. Let's see. He did the original Predator. He did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is awesome. Last Boy Scout, Last Action Hero. Oh, Lethal Weapon 2, RoboCop 3. let's see. Need for... Oh, that's terrible.
See, it could be hit or miss.
Yeah. Last Action Hero wasn't the best thing ever.
He was Last Hawkins. Boy Scout was pretty... He was Hawkins. He was Hawkins in the original Predator. He was a crewman on the USS Reuben James in The Hunt for Red October. He was in a TV series called Dark Justice. I don't think that's about Justice League Dark, really.
Ooh, he did The Long Kiss Goodnight.
All right. So now
I made that into a date movie. I don't recommend that as a date movie.
All right.
I've not seen it.
And you know why? It's not the greatest film. And it does have Samuel L. Jackson in it, though.
Well, that makes everything better. He makes everything better. He brings it up a notch. Yeah.
Typically he does, yes.
All right, so my second entertainment story is leaked photo shows Star Trek Discovery New Aliens. Now, when this first was released, they were saying, oh, look, it's the new Klingons, and they look way different than the Klingons that we've seen before. But the person that originally posted the photo said he may be wrong about the whole Klingon thing. It's somebody that works on set who just happened to snap a photo, and he posted it, I think, on Twitter or Instagram. And I don't know if you guys got a chance to see them, but they look very, let me see, what does it say? The shape of their heads make them seem more otherworldly than the Klingons that we've become accustomed to. So they have long necks and very little hair, if no hair, from the pictures. This comes from thenerdist.com. So it's either Klingons or not. If it is Klingons, they look a lot different than the ones that we've seen before, but not much different from the Klingons that we saw in Star Trek Into Darkness. They were quite different from the ones from the TV show. So I guess we'll see. We'll see when Star Trek Discovery premieres and Brad doesn't watch it. I'll have to tell you all about it.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
After seeing a UFO or an extraterrestrial, would you share your experience with others? Odds are that tons of people out there have had encounters with ETs, but were too scared to come forward. There is a huge stigma surrounding UFO and ET phenomena, which is largely due to mainstream media and Hollywood. It's no secret that the U.S. government has been discussing UFOs for quite some time. Leaked FBI documents, emails from the Clinton campaign, the Black Budget Secret Space Program, and even quotes from former U.S. presidents have confirmed that. Even the Vatican has addressed extraterrestrial intelligence, yet many people will simply brush off this subject as if it's a joke. Well, that's not the case for Spanish artist Robert Imos. After seeing a UFO and ETs face-to-face, he was inspired to share his experiences through his art. By painting what he saw, he hopes to desensitize people to ETs so that hopefully, if and when they finally return, people won't be scared of their appearances. While on vacation in Brazil, Robert went for a walk on his own. Bringing a pencil and some paper, he set out to adventure through the dunes. He found a place to sit and soon realized he was directly in front of a UFO. He made some illustrations depicting his experience. Robert believes that the extraterrestrials who visited him chose to contact him because of his painting and sculpting skills. He feels that they were aware of his artistic abilities and that they knew he could accurately portray their appearances. Despite their diverse physical characteristics, Robert felt as though they weren't trying to harm him, but rather help him. Robert explains, "They're like older brothers who want to help us, not harm us. My role is to reduce the fear of them before they make their return. I make this work so you were not scared of seeing a figure with a long neck and scales. Perhaps in 20 years, people will have seen these figures, and then they'll say, that crazy man was right." It hasn't always been easy for Robert. Some of the people around me understand and accept this, and some don't. I know it's hard to believe. I have to believe a lot of things that I don't see. When I draw them, they become tangible. I'd like to see them again, he says. If you are interested in listening to Robert's story told by him, you can check out his interview on Vice, which is where the individual who wrote this article got the quotes from. So Many people seem to think that ET phenomena is a joke, as mentioned, which is primarily due to the lack of disclosure and the stigma surrounding the topic. In reality, there are so many government documents and emails, as well as countless reported human encounters with UFOs and ETs, that it would be ignorant to deny the facts. We can all learn a lot from Robert's passion and determination to spread the truth. We live in a society that thrives off of fear. And that is why it is crucial to challenge fear, which is precisely what Robert is doing. He recognized that the beings who visited him don't need to be feared and feels passionate about sharing this with others through his artwork. His paintings also speak to how using a creative outlet can help us understand some of his life's most notable events. Expressing ourselves can be incredibly therapeutic, as it allows us to expose our vulnerabilities and speak our truths, whether that be verbal or not. For Robert, his creative outlet is through art. And that was from collectiveevolution.com.
They're very nice pictures.
Oh, no, they are. And the aliens are really interesting. Mm-hmm. they do have very elongated necks, and they have the stereotypical almond-shaped eyes. But what I think is really cool is that they, and I don't know if it's like a physical characteristic or if it would be maybe part of their culture, but it looks like they have some markings that are different between the extraterrestrial beings. So in one image, one painting, actually, I guess it's two paintings that are side by side. And what I would guess would probably be the male, on his elongated neck, he has these spots, or it has these spots. And the, what I would guess would be female on the right, has more diamond shaped markings. So I don't know that those would necessarily be scales, because, you know, it's noticeably different between the two beings. But I think it's cool that he puts a lot of detail into his work, more so than, you know, you see sketches of aliens and they're always, you know, kind of a, like the stereotypical grays, big black almond shaped eyes, and there's not really a whole lot of detail, no identifying marks. So with these, I think it's kind of cool.
And she's wearing a headband of some kind, it looks like.
Right. And the, what I would guess would be the female is wearing a headband, whereas the male being is not. But they both, like I said, have markings. One of them looks like they're wearing a robe. The other one kind of like a shirt or a gown, maybe. And then you also have paintings of the craft that he saw, which would be pretty close to a stereotypical saucer. Except at the bottom of the saucer, you've got a couple of different levels where you can see the being standing inside, mm-hmm. looking out through the window.
And I like how it's almost chronological, like he painted it as it was coming down, because the first painting is the craft way up in the sky, and then the next one is closer to the ground, and then he shows, or the next painting is a portal or a window in the craft, and you see the two aliens. Then you see them up closer, and then you see them really close up. I thought that was kind of neat, the progression of that.
So if you've not checked out Robert Yemos's art in general, it's pretty cool. Just do a Google search. There are videos, but most of them are in Spanish. But there are some with subtitles, or that, you know, have been translated. So, yeah, I would check it out. It's pretty cool.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
Black triangular
three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
The sighting that I grabbed this week is an older one. As you guys know, when I do the sightings, I like to kind of do historical incidences. And this one comes from December 29th, 1980. It's called the Cache Landrum Incident. And this happened in Texas. While driving through the southern tip of the East Texas Piney Woods, north of Houston, Betty Cache, Vicky Landrum, and Vicky's 7-year-old grandson, Colby, came upon a huge diamond-shaped object just above the trees and 130 feet away. Cache hit the brakes, and she and Landrum stepped outside. I hope they stopped first. It just said, hit the brakes, and they stepped outside. So, they noticed intense heat. Their faces felt as if they were burning. When Vicky re-entered the car and touched the dashboard to steady herself, she left a handprint. So basically, her hand was so hot that it either... I don't know what handprint means. Does that mean that the dash melted, or it was just like maybe moisture from her hand being hot? I'm not quite sure.
Well, if they're north of Houston, it is a very humid... It can be a very humid environment, so maybe it's some sort of condensation and the temperature change. Like, perhaps the dash was cold.
Okay, yeah.
The air was hot and there was some condensation. I have no idea.
Okay. So, blasting fire and heat, the UFO slowly ascended. Suddenly, numerous helicopters, 23 in all. 23 helicopters! That's a lot.
Just a couple.
Yeah. Appeared from all directions, positioning themselves near the strange craft. By the time the witnesses were back in the car and watching the spectacle from their moving vehicle, other motorists saw the object and helicopters from different, more distant locations. Eventually, the flying objects were lost to view. Now, this had a profound effect on their lives. Back home, the three fell sick. Cache, most severely, she suffered blisters, nausea, headaches, diarrhea, loss of hair, and reddening of the eyes. On January 3rd, unable to walk and nearly unconscious, she was admitted to a Houston hospital. Vicky and Colby were experiencing the same symptoms, though less severely. The witness's health problems continue to this day. On September 1991, Cache's personal physician, Dr. Brian McClelland, told the Houston Post that her condition was a textbook case of radiation poisoning.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Comparable to being 3 to 5 miles from the epicenter of Hiroshima.
Jesus, what?
Yeah. That's crazy. For years... the three have pursued their case through the courts, seeking answers and redress. I don't know what that means.
Redress?
Redress. What does that mean?
Compensation?
Okay. All right. But official agents...
It can be like compensation
or an apology, or
a remedy.
Yeah, something to set it right, compensation for wrong agreements, that's financial or otherwise.
I've never seen that word before.
Sorry. Yes.
Official agencies deny any knowledge of the incident, even though the helicopters have been identified as twin-rotor Boeing CH-47 Chinooks used by both the Army and the Marines. I've been inside one of those, and I've been around them. And there's no way there was 23 Chinooks in that small space. There's no way.
They had double vision. Triple vision.
Because of the radiation.
It exposed a whole lot of radiation. Who knows what it does to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's an interesting case. You don't hear too much about people that actually have physical side effects from being around a UFO. Once in a while you will, but this is pretty severe. This is...
Yeah.
How many miles from the epicenter of Hiroshima?
So, what, three?
Three to five. Three to five. Yeah. Wow. That's a serious...
That's a lot.
That's... You better get your exhaust fixed on that that diamond-shaped UFO.
Yeah.
It got a leak of some kind.
And the thing to remember, too, is that Hiroshima was an atomic bomb and not like the bombs we use today, which are far more powerful. Mm-hmm. But
still, it's pretty bad.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there you go. I would love... Because people have told us that they have experiences that they've had who want to share them. So if you're one of those kind of people, please let us know. Give us email us or call our voicemail number. What is it again? 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Or email aliens@gncasts.com. Would love to get a listener, because we've had a couple listeners be our sightings before. So let's get more of that, please. And thank you.
I think it's awesome that you got this off of howstuffworks.com. I love their podcasts.
Yeah, I've never seen their website before. So I'm thinking that maybe they have more. I'm hoping they have more of these. So I'll go back there and look again sometime.
They might, because there is Stuff to Blow Your Mind. How Stuff Works, and then Stuff Your Mom Never Told You, which just recently wrapped up. But there's a whole series of these podcasts, and they're very informative, and they just cover a whole spectrum of topics. And so you might find more out there. I don't know, but yeah, I recommend any of these.
I've never listened to any of them, but Stuff to Blow Your Mind sounds very interesting.
Yep, and then there's Stuff You Should Know.
All right.
So no, like I said, they're all very, very great podcasts, and they're, like I said, one of them has been retired, I suppose. The hosts have moved on to other things, and that was Stuff Your Mom Never Told You or something like that. So
kind of like the Sci-Fi Film School that you and I used to do, Vanessa.
They moved on, though. Maybe if I have the time and energy, I'll try bringing it back.
Do it. Do it.
Does the sound of the TARDIS get you all excited? Are you a fan of the longest-running science fiction show? Then for all your news and gossip, check out Who Knew and Review. You can find us at gncasts.com/TARDIS. Each week, we will run through a collection of stories from around the Hooniverse itself at gncasts.com/TARDIS.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making
picks and warnings time, yay! These are alien-related things that we have enjoyed or not, thus the warning. Looks like Anessa's first. What do you got?
I have a pinball game. Metroid Prime Pinball for Nintendo DS. Now, this game came out in like 2005. I don't think I've had it that long. I would guess probably around 2008 is when I picked it up. I really enjoy the game. I think I've mentioned a Alien versus Predator pinball game a couple shows or so back. So now we get Metroid Prime Pinball. For those that are not familiar with Metroid, it is a game series that was created by Nintendo, and it chronicles the missions of a bounty hunter named Samus. And she protects the galaxy from attacks of space pirates. And their attempts to harness the power of Metroids. And Metroids are like these large parasitic jellyfish organisms, kind of creepy looking. And so there's a whole bunch of games out there that have been created over the years for Metroid. And Samus is kind of a badass, and they've turned her into a pinball game. But they actually did a really good job of doing so, I think. Because you do get to encounter different locations and creatures and stuff that you come across in the video games. So it's very relevant in trying to bring in familiar items, themes. There is kind of a story that you can play through to where you do go and battle the Metroid Prime. And so, yeah. Like I said, I really enjoy the pinball game. I think they do a really good job of capturing the essence of pinball. It wasn't just something where they were trying to, like, hey, let's try to make more money, which I'm sure part of it was. But, you know, they did a really good job in bringing it to life. And it's kind of cool because there's certain points in the game, depending on how you can get Samus to roll around. And that's the other thing, too, is Samus can morph into she has the ability to morph into a sphere. So it's not completely far-fetched, like, oh my gosh, they've turned her into a pinball. Because I mean, I've played other games like Pokemon Pinball and Super Mario Pinball, and they don't really turn Mario into a pinball, if I remember correctly, but they still have characters and stuff, and they've got Pokemon that you can collect and the Pokemon Pinball. Still my favorite is Pokemon Pinball. It's totally awesome. But that was for the Nintendo SP, I believe. But anyway. So yeah, Metroid Pinball for the Nintendo DS. I would see if you can do a quick Google search and see if you can find it and purchase it and play it if you enjoy Metroid games.
Or you can go to the link in the show notes for more information.
You could. So
this is definitely a pick, not a warning, right?
No, it's definitely a pick. And the other thing that I like is because it is for the DS. So, you know, with the various incarnations of the DS, you have the split screen. And so it does carry from the bottom screen to the top screen is one, you know, like it's the face of the pinball machine. So you're not limited to like a tiny little screen. Which actually makes it kind of nice. And then the gap between is just kind of a dead space. It doesn't interfere with the gameplay or anything at all.
Sounds fun.
I broke it out today. I went on my quest to find Metroid Pinball because I'm like, I haven't played that in a while. So I broke it out and played it for a little bit this afternoon.
So how'd you do?
I've done better.
Well, I mean, it's your first time for a while, you know?
No, I actually did pretty good. Like, I've played other pinball games lately, and I think I did a lot better with the Metroid Pinball. Maybe I was just having, like, a really good day today. But, yeah. And you can tap on the... Because the bottom screen of the DS is a touch screen, so you can actually tap on the screen to do the tilt thing, which I never really do the tilt, because then it gets weird and... Even pinball machines in real life, I don't tilt.
All right. So the big question is, how many flying saucers does Metroid Prime Pinball for Nintendo DS get?
I'm going to give it 5.
Whoa.
5.
My girl.
Because I've had it forever and I still play it.
All right. It's like the old
Clearly,
reliable.
I don't hate it.
Clearly, yes. All right, so. There we go. Great, great pick, great recommendation. Thank you, Nessa.
Mm-hmm.
My pick, it's definitely a pick, is The Colony Season 3. Or, excuse me, Colony. It's not, there was a show called The Colony. That's not it. This is just Colony Season 3. In the States, it's on USA. I forget what channel it is on here in Canada, but it doesn't matter. No matter where you can get it, it's good. You should watch it. It stars Josh Holloway, who you may know from Lost, and that other weird show he was on for a while that did terribly. Also, Laurie from The Walking Dead is in it. And the guy that plays that general, who has played that general, I forget his name, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
General Talbot?
Yeah. I forget the actor's name. But he's like a character actor. He's in a lot of things. And he's also in this. I talked about season one last year when it premiered. I used it as my pick, so this is just kind of an update on where the show is at now. They're back for season two, and they're revealing more about the... well, now we know it's aliens. At first, we didn't know it was aliens. It was they kept it very hidden for a while as to who was keeping... See, Colony is basically... In the world of Colony, all the major cities in the world are like fenced off. They have big walls, or they have built great walls around their cities, and they didn't make Mexico pay for them.
hey,
sorry, I just broke our rule. Sorry,
we did.
Damn it! Pretend I didn't say that. Pretend you didn't hear that.
Oh, we're done. We're moving on.
Okay. So they've been really good at explaining kind of more of the mythology of the show this season, kind of digging deeper into what's going on. Like they've shown places that weren't Los Angeles, because season one was just in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is kind of sectioned, like all the major cities in the world are like sectioned off into districts. And this is like Los Angeles. I forget what part of Los Angeles it is, but it's the nicer part of Los Angeles because they've shown the other part, and that's not so nice in this season. So they've did flashbacks, and they actually, I think the first episode or maybe the second episode, they did a flashback to before the aliens arrived. So we saw it actually happen, which was neat. We didn't see that in season one. They also revealed that there were people in cahoots with the aliens, like the rich and powerful of the world. Kind of, it was a conspiracy that they've been working with the aliens for a long time, even before they arrived. So it's basically the humans are in power, but not really. Like the aliens oversee everything, but the humans are in charge on the ground. And... yeah, so I'm not going to tell you much more, because if you haven't watched the show, I'd be giving away way too much. Just know that it's a pretty good show. First season was more of a procedural, because Josh Holloway's character is a cop.
Yeah,
he works for the agency that's running the place. But at the same time, his wife was working for the resistance. So there's a lot of secrets that have yet to be revealed. People are, well, he knows that she was working for the resistance, but he's going back to work after retrieving his son that was missing the whole entire season one. But now his other son's missing. So it's, they can't keep all their kids for some reason. But yeah, season two of The Colony, check it out if you can. I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 flying saucers.
Cool.
All right, Brad, it's up to you. Bring it on home.
Brad's not here, man.
Oh, he's not. Was he taking care of the cats?
Alex needed something, so we had to step away.
Okay. This is interesting. I was kind of like the sandwich in your... a video game sandwich here, because you got Metroid Prime Pinball for Nintendo DS, you got Colony, then you got Brad's, which is also
we do have Brad's, which is a game.
Mm-hmm.
It is a game, and it is a game that I found for Android, because my phone is an Android, and it is called Grabatron. And our cat is insane. Yes, Furlock. Thank you. And it is a game where you control an alien craft and you are flying through. It's a side scroller, which is really kind of interesting. You're not playing over a flat plane. It is a side scroller, and you hold your phone horizontally, so lengthwise, and your right thumb is used for direction and speed of flying your craft, left, right, up, down. And your left thumb releases a giant claw, the Grabatron, and you can abduct humans. You can rescue other aliens that are stranded on Earth. Or you can pick up objects. Like you can pick up a car and drop it on something. You can pick up a large boulder and move it out of the way. And there are gems that you occasionally find, and they fuel your ship. So the whole purpose of this is to keep finding gems to keep moving. You need to watch out for humans that have guns, like police officers and whatever, that shoot at your ship, which can damage your shields and can damage your ship and ultimately cause your ship to explode. If it runs out of power, it explodes. If it runs out of shields and takes enough damage, the ship explodes. So, and with collecting the gems, they not only power your ship, but you can spend them for upgrades on your alien craft. And there are 5 different UFOs that you can possibly fly. So it's a really fun game. It's actually kind of addictive. And I found a point where I could actually fly into a subterranean cave, and I was actually kind of flying around. You got to be very careful, because if you, bump into the walls of the cave, you take shield damage, which can ultimately harm your ship and cause it to explode, which is what happened to me. But I did find some aliens that were trapped down in the cave, and I rescued them. And there were other gun-toting farmers that were shooting at my craft. It's a really strange game, but it is a lot of fun. And that game, again, is called Grabatron. And it is available for iTunes as well as Android.
Grabatron.
I'm sorry. Grabatron.
No, you have to make your voice more robotic. Grabatron.
Oh, sorry. Grabatron. Grabatron.
There you go. Perfect. How many flying saucers did Grabatron get?
I give it 5.
Wow.
Out of 5.
High scores this week.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's addictive and it's very fun to play. So, and not overly complicated. Once you get used to the controls and the speed and direction of flying the ship with your right thumb, dropping and doing stuff with the claw, the Grabatron, is not that hard. So,
all right, there you go. In review, we had Grabatron, we had Colony Season 2, and Metroid Prime Pinball for Nintendo DS. And like I said before, we have the links to all of our picks and everything else, the sighting, our stories, pretty much everything in our show notes with the podcast or on the website, gncasts.com/aliens.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncasts.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories we covered, like I said, check them out in the show notes. We'd like to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome. He's got brand new music out, a new EP called EP4, and you can check it out at monkeywarhol.bandcamp.com. /album/EP4 or just go to the show notes or Google. That's also a good option. Also, to thanks to Retward von Dürrenberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing music, a song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net, thecaravel.net. And finally, thanks to our friend Ben Olson for recording the little disclaimer at the very start of this episode. You can find out what he does at benolson.com. Okay, final thoughts. Brad, what do you got?
I have a feeling I'll be spending more time playing Grabitron.
Grabitron.
Oh, wait. Got to use the right one.
Grabitron.
All right, looking forward to two more picks with different variations of Grabitron in the near future.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, Anessa, what's your final thought?
Cat butt.
Yeah. Our cat is currently giving her the business end right now and trying to be all cute.
Like, hey, check out my butt. I pooped today.
Does it have a big butt and it cannot lie?
You other brothers can't deny.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. And until next time, we'll talk to you in your headphones.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.